Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to the next round on the Leave It in the Ring radio network of David Duenas. I'm your co-host, Steve Kim from Los Angeles, and joining me from the Bay Area where he left his heart, Golden Gate Gabe Montoya. Gabe, we embark on another show, and we're joined by a very special guest, the legend himself, Larry Merchant.
It's not a lot of fights to talk about or break down, but we've got boxing writer Helper. We've got a lot of news and notes, and we got Larry Legend. I can't wait for this interview.
Yeah, and look for Larry on the line. He should be calling in. Programming reminder, we have some stuff going on, so this will be a 90-minute edition of the next round. And if you want to ask Mr. Merchant a question, you could do so by tweeting us at SteveUCNLive and at Gabriel_Montoya. And if we have time for calls, that number, 347-215-7598. Gabe, is he there?
I do believe I saw him a second ago, and then he disappeared. Maybe he's calling back. Let me see. I don't have him just yet. There he is, and he just called back in. All right, here we go. Mr. Merchant, are you there?
Yes, sir.
Oh, and he has arrived. All right. Larry, listen, I know the people want to hear what you have to say. The big news that was announced today on ESPN SportsCenter this morning by the founder and head of Golden Boy Promotions is Oscar De La Hoya, that September 16th, we are going to be there at the T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas for when Gennady Golovkin takes on Saul Canelo Alvarez. Larry, you emailed me about a week and a half ago, and you said, Steve, for the good of boxing, I really believe that this fight should be at a stadium such as AT&T Stadium, where you can get 80 to 90,000 people. One of the lessons you taught me, Larry, was they always go where the money is. Isn't that exactly what they did here, Larry?
Well, it's for a promoter using a big event, perhaps to get other obligations down the road that a big stadium couldn't offer. I was hopeful that this being such a good year for prize fighting, that having it in a huge venue with upwards of 90,000 people would itself attract a lot of attention for the fight and for the game. But I understand that it's dollars and cents that goes into all of this, and not just for this particular event, but for other potential events down the road. And Las Vegas, I don't want to say it's unbeaten as far as this kind of a contest is concerned, but it is the heavyweight champion.
Larry, how much do you think that they were concerned about the presence of Mayweather-McGregor perhaps landing on that date or landing somewhere around September 16th in Las Vegas, perhaps cutting into their business?
I don't know. And I don't think that Mayweather, as shrewd as he is, would do that. There's no reason he couldn't wait a few months and have the event to himself. They would take viewers from each other. So I can't. This is a date that Canelo has earned, and he is, speaking of heavyweight champions, the heavyweight champion of the sport in terms of being a box office attraction.
Gabe,
Who do you like in the fight?
Well, gun to my head, as I always put these things, I would have to go with Golovkin until proven otherwise. But I think that whatever the reasons for delaying the fight, the wisdom of it is clear that many experts are giving Canelo a much better chance now than they would have a year or two ago, and that in itself is good for the event. Hopefully we get one of those rare events where the fight itself lives up to or even supersedes the hype.
Do you think that, to your eyes, did Golovkin get old, or was Danny Jacobs that tough an opponent, and is Danny Jacobs a tougher opponent than Canelo?
Look, Danny Jacobs was a big guy, an experienced guy, a strong guy who took some serious punches in the game, and one of the top middleweights in the world. And he gave a great effort, and if we've been around long enough to know that the best fighters in the world don't knock everybody out all of the time. But it's a tribute to Golovkin that the expectations for him were so high that if he merely beat a very good middleweight under those circumstances in the middleweight's hometown, by the way, that people were disappointed or wondering whether he's lost it. So that goes with the territory. I'm old enough to have seen the greatest fighters in the canon who have been taking the distance. A good professional fighter can take the best professional fighters the distance if that's his priority.
Larry, Gennady Golovkin just turned 35. I remember when you came on with this, I think it was last year, and you said to both of us, hey, you know what? If they make the fight by September of 2017, that would be when it's the ripest. That's when it was the correct time to make it. It's not spoiled milk. Do you still feel that way?
Sure. I think that a lot of people now see that as terrific a fighter as Golovkin is that really good opposition can neutralize him for rounds or even over a whole fight. And by showing that he's just not going to knock everybody out, and seeing Canelo in a couple of more fights and see how he's matured, I think more people are giving Canelo a shot, even if we're not picking him. And given his style, given his quickness, his experience, sure. I think he can make a fight out of it and maybe a classic fight out of it.
Gabe, one more question for me before I throw it back to you. How do you think Canelo Alvarez has developed since he was blanked by Floyd Mayweather in 2013, Larry?
Well, I think he's been more willing to use his strength and his fighting on the inside against a number of opponents. There was a time when he used more movement. When he wanted to go on a defensive side, he would step back and step away. And now he's fighting more at close quarters. I think he's probably grown a little bit physically. So this is the sweet spot of his career right now. He's about as good as he's going to be.
When you look at him, I just wonder, who has the better resume, you know, he's got the Floyd loss, and people don't really hold that against him, the catch weight and his youth. But he was blanked in that fight. I haven't really seen Canelo against a real puncher at a real disadvantage. Even Chavez Jr., I was never really a believer in him. Who do you think has the better resume? Who has the more depth there?
Well, you know, I don't – I at this level of the game, when they have proven themselves over time, I don't think the resume counts as much as what our eyes are telling us about what we're looking at. Canelo has fought a lot of elite fighters, maybe more elite fighters than Golovkin has, simply because he is such an attraction that anybody who that everybody wants to fight him, win or lose, because if you lose, you're gonna make a lot of money, which is, as you might have heard, a big part of the game. Whereas whether there are serious opponents for Golovkin, none of them are anxious to fight him. So it's difficult to weigh the resumes side by side. It has to be, what do we see? What do we think we know? What do we feel? And we want to see it happen.
I saw you do an interview recently with Fight Hub's Marcos Villegas about boxing's next superstar, and you talked about how that was something different than just an experienced champion. We just saw, you know, Errol Spence take out Kell Brook in a fantastic fight. Do you think that guy, maybe more than any of that generation, has the chance to be a superstar, or has that person just not been identified? Do you think that person exists right now?
I think he's in the conversation. There are, if we're talking about superstars in terms of ability, married to the ability to attract crowds and money, and Canelo is certainly there. I think that Golovkin is there, everybody recognizing how good he is, but never going to be the A-plus side in a pay-per-view event in America. Do I think Spence has the ability, the body language, the style, all of that, to one day be there? Yes, but it's a rare thing. You have to have a combination of things happen and connections in the stars and so on. But surely,
an actual
a fight or two down the road, him against Thurman would be a big event for fight fans. Whether he can cross that barrier into the casual fans and become that kind of superstar, no one really knows. And Al Haymon has yet, in his current venture, been able to establish somebody. I would say that it's conceivable that Wilder, with one more big event, yes, because we haven't had an American heavyweight champion in a long time, because he fights in a crowd-friendly style. If he were to go out there and fight Joshua and win an exciting fight, I think that's the most likely scenario that we can see at this moment.
Larry Merchant joins us for the first hour on The Next Round with Gabriel Montoya and Steve Kim. Larry, back in November, the Monday after, you came on with us to talk about your disgust at the Andre Ward-Kovalev decision that was rendered, and that seems to be the majority opinion. They have a rematch in about 2 weeks, and I don't know about you, Larry, it seems to me like no one really gives a damn for one reason or the other. How much are you anticipating Ward-Kovalev 2?
Well, I'm looking forward to both of them winning the rematch. Put it that way. And if Kovalev wins, then there probably will be more attention paid if it turned out to be a trilogy. But unfortunately, Ward, by his, even though he's fought the best guys out there, has never, and this is a good example of how difficult it is to become a real star or superstar, because of his style. Here's a gold medalist, but who has fought all the top guys as a super middleweight, and now going into the light heavyweight division, and whether it's because of his style or some other part of the unknown chemistry that it takes, has maybe because of the time off that interfered with his momentum as a fighter, even though he has the highest respect inside the fighting establishment. I don't know if he's ever going to get there.
You talked about how you know, a superstar would need a lot of different things to really put it all together, not just performance and personality, but also, don't you think, a promoter with a vision? And that's kind of the problem with Al Haymon fighters. I think you said a long time ago, beating Tiger Woods doesn't make you Tiger Woods, referring to Mosley and De La Hoya. I wonder if Wilder, I mean, Joshua's been promoted beautifully. Would just beating him translate over here? In this,
I don't
know.
That would be a real test of whether, even if boxing is never going to be, quote, a mainstream sport again, of whether it could have a mainstream personality, a mainstream star. You know, certainly, for example, De La Hoya. He had it coming in. He had a running start. So did Mayweather as an Olympian, as a familiar name in the sport. But it took years and years for him to develop into that. So, you know, that's, yes, you need a promoter who has that kind of vision. And certainly Bob Arum has been a leader in being able to develop guys. But when's the last time he's had a successful pay-per-view event? And even though he has maybe the best young fighter out there in Crawford, he has an outstanding young Mexican and Puerto Rican, but they've been slowed down by injuries, part of the game. And when and whether that happens for them, I don't know. If I was that smart, I'd be doing something else.
Larry, going back, the heavyweight battle between Anthony Joshua and Klitschko, 11th round knockout at the Wembley Stadium, was that the best thing to happen to boxing in a long time?
It was, and in particular because it's been surrounded by good events. There were a number of very good fights earlier in the year. Then we had the Spence-Brook fight, and we had the Ward-Kovalev coming up behind it. So that enters into frames it in a way. And, of course, the comeback of boxing in Britain, which is totally unexpected, and to attract 90,000 fans, and a longtime champion against a young, charismatic challenger, it was a setup for something good happening, and something better than good happened.
That fight, like, asked every question of Joshua you would want asked of a young fighter, and he answered them the way you want your guy to do it. To me, if anybody can be that next level guy that crosses over, it's got to be him. You know, he's just so articulate.
Well,
and
we would think so in a world in which is more globalized for sports and other things.
Mm-hmm.
But it will be interesting to see whether whatever he adds and whoever he adds to his resume, whether it translates in the U.S., which is the biggest market. I mean, remember, the Klitschkos, as good as they were and as interesting as they were as brothers and great amateur fighters and interesting human beings, they never were able to achieve that kind of stardom we're talking about in the U.S., although they had it in Europe, particularly Vladimir. I don't know. I don't know if that can happen. If he were to beat Wilder and if there were to be a rematch and there would be somebody else who came up and they wanted to fight over here, I'd like to see how he would be received.
Larry, did Vladimir Klitschko earn a measure of respect in losing that he hadn't in, let's say, 20 victories the last 5, 6, 7 years?
I think it's fair to say that he earned a large measure of respect for going out in a fight like that. You know, and as we've discussed, you know, sometimes you win in the way you lose. And here he was in with a big, talented young guy and who forced him to fight in a way, and he fought him back. And, it was the best heavyweight fight since big elite heavyweight fight, I would say, since Vitaly Klitschko and Lennox Lewis, and the first big elite heavyweight fight in my memory that since Douglas Tyson, in which both fighters were down.
Oh, go ahead, Steve.
Gabe, let's go to the Twitter timeline. People want to ask Mr. Merchant some questions, and of course we start with the president, Andrew V. Kennedy. The question here, where does Larry think the PBC is now compared to where it started?
At the same time as it doesn't seem to be all over the place on so many networks and so many fights, it seems to be in the place where it's putting together the top fighters, maybe because it simply has to. So they've invested an awful lot of money, apparently, and in the next year or so, we'll see if there's any payoff, if somebody, you know, say a Spence, say a Wilder breaks through. And in the environment we have, say it's Wilder, and say they put on a big heavyweight event in America. Maybe they make all their money back. I don't know. I'm not an accountant or a lawyer, nobody has shown me the books, and I don't know if I'd understand it if they showed them to me.
Here's a question from Michael Stack. Has there ever been a bigger fraud as a lineal champion than Adonis Stevenson? Larry, did you even watch his fight this past weekend against Andre Schwanthal on Showtime?
I did happen to watch it. Fortunately, it was a short fight. Look, there is a lot of interest in boxing in French Canada, Montreal. And Stevenson is one of those fighters who has a following up there. And so that's enabled him to be maneuvered through the system and make occasional appearances on television. How good is he? How would he perform against a Ward or a Kovalev? I don't know if we'll find out. But one of the interesting sidelights to this, guys, is can you remember a time when suddenly even the light heavyweight division is interesting?
Yeah.
To us. I used to think that if you wanted to hide from the FBI, that you should become a light heavyweight. Nobody would ever notice you.
Wait, well, even during the days of Archie Moore? Really?
Well, even back in that day, you know, every once in a while, a light heavyweight would come along who would become a star, a personality, a fighter you had to follow if you were a fan. But normally back in those days, if a light heavyweight was that good, he could fight a heavyweight, because that was not the era of super heavyweights who weighed 240 and upwards. That was a time when heavyweights weighed 200 to 210. So a light heavyweight, it wasn't that big of a step up. But in any event, I take your point. Yes, there was. But light heavyweight division, and certainly in modern times, hasn't looked as good as it has now, in part because Ward has stepped up. And the Russians who have been coming and with their fan friendly styles, and now the Canadian, so there's a few mixings and matchings that can keep it going for a while.
Larry, here's another tweet from Michael Stack, who also has a question. He says, "Please tell him about me starting a Larry Merchant chant and almost getting into a fight and getting kicked out of the Barclays Center." But he wants to know, Larry, what are three things you would change about boxing if you could, if you were Commissioner Merchant, if you will?
Whoa. I'm not a fan of all of the titles, although they do serve a purpose, as you have pointed out many times, Steve. And there was a time way back in the day when there were no official champions, 100
mm-hmm.
years ago. And certain guys would declare themselves champions, or their promoters would. And if they were able to put a lot of asses in seats, they were recognized as champions. And then after that, 30s, 40s, 50s, there were so many fighters out there that promoters would promote guys as virtually neighborhood or state champions. So there's always been an impulse on the part of the promoters to find a way to get fans for a particular fighter. And that's, in a way, it shows how boxing has changed, and that we need to have, you know, four championships in more divisions and have sub-champions in those divisions, so the sanctioning bodies can get a piece of every fight out there, and so on and so forth. And,
but Larry, don't you think that inactivity is a huge issue, though, that in our sport, while other
sports
program
to
see...
Well, I think it is, and I don't know that anything can be done. That just has to do with the economics of it. If you had one major body, they could dictate that a fighter had to fight two or three times a year, otherwise they would take the title from him. I don't know if you can really do that. And in the modern economics with pay-per-view and so forth, promoters and fighters and managers have been spoiled because they're all trying to maneuver into that one big jackpot pay-per-view event they can find. And so, and since there isn't the kind of in-depth interest in boxing that there used to be, the first question I would get often would get from non-fans, casual sports fans and so forth, is he unbeaten? And suddenly, unbeaten now is a way of promoting a fighter, even if he's had 50 fights or 40 fights. So I don't. Can you change that? Can you wave a wand and change that? Probably not, because you can't change how people want to watch the sport and what attracts them. If I had a real change, it would be in the judging of fights. And maybe the refereeing of fights. And I mean, I recall seeing referees take two fighters who were doing more clinching than fighting, and saying to them, in effect, "This is a fight. People came here to see a fight," and letting them know that if they didn't fight, that there would be some consequence. And I also think that in terms of judging fights, that the benefit of the doubt should almost always go to the fighter who is trying to make the fight.
Larry, here's a question from Evan Korn, the corner man. What's the best breakout performance Larry ever called? And he asked maybe Tyson Berbick or maybe Lennox Lewis Razor Ruddock.
Well, Tyson Berbick was not a shock to anybody, because Berbick was just an in-between champion who happened to beat an old Larry Holmes, was it? Do I remember that correctly? I don't know how he got to be a quote champion.
He beat Pinklin Thomas, Larry,
okay,
in an upset.
All right, well, there you go. And somebody became a title holder recently who beat a guy named Martin, who I feel like I'm elevating him if I say he was a journeyman. I'm not sure. I think in recent times, I thought the way the kid Scott beat Bernard Hopkins was sensational. And by the way, I didn't mention him as a light heavyweight prospect.
Oh, you mean Joe Smith?
Joe Smith. Sorry. Thank you for correcting me.
Larry,
I have an example. Sorry?
Larry, I have an example of a breakout performance. I remember you were basically part of my headline. I remember we, in the summer of 2001, went to see Oscar De La Hoya fight Javier Castillejo, and you said to me, "Steve, I think I saw one of the best fighters in the world," and you said it wasn't De La Hoya. It was Manny Pacquiao. Remember that,
well,
when he just blitzed Lalo Lebdwaba?
Well, you know, look, anybody who beat De La Hoya, including Hopkins and Mayweather, got tremendous bumps in their ratings, in their star power. And certainly Manny Pacquiao did. Manny Pacquiao was already a star, but that put him over the moon. That made him, I think Pacquiao was probably the biggest international star since Ali, a guy who translated in some way around the world.
It's Hall of Fame weekend coming up, right? And I was curious if you had any just thoughts on Evander Holyfield or Steve Farhood, Johnny Tapia, or Barrera, you know, any of the guys going in.
Well, I love them all. You know, Tapia was always a drama waiting to happen. Barrera was, one of the best featherweights at a time when featherweights had replaced heavyweights in terms of their interest among fight fans. I'm sorry, I forget. Who was the third
one? Holyfield.
Holyfield is, to me, one of the best fighters of our time. And I say fighters because he was more than a heavyweight. He was a real fighter, fought everybody, fought him again, beat Tyson twice, was one of the toughest guys and best competitors. If we had 20 more like him, I think boxing would be back in the 80s.
Larry, I know me and you have talked about this before, but you had a really special connection with Marco Antonio Barrera. Like, you guys just vibed, whether it was at the pre-fight meetings for HBO, whether it was your interviews after the fights. What was it about him that connected you to him so deeply?
Well, first of all, as a fighter, his first fight with Morales was one of the most intense back-and-forth fights I'd ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
He was just a hell of a good boxer banger. And you remember that was at a time when Mexican fans were looking for the successor, their next great champion after Chavez. The personal connection is he was a very smart guy who was fun to talk to. The only fighter I ever recall who would come to the fighter meetings wearing a suit and a tie and not have a lot of trainers and cornermen and promoters hanging around with him. He could handle himself. So he was, one of those, with Morales and I forget the other guys who were in that featherweight era.
Marquez.
Prince Nassim.
Junior Jones.
Prince Nassim.
Well, Larry, you bring up the Hamed fight. I seem to recall you being pretty happy about that result, as was I. What do you remember most about that night?
Well, I remember the fight, and of course, and I think by that time that Hamed was not, and I was friendly with Manuel Stewart, he wasn't taking his position in the game seriously. He wasn't training as hard as he should have. And that offended me a little bit. But I remember two things. One thing I remember about him when he fought a junior in Madison Square Garden, and he came in with this outrageous walk-in, and I said, this is the end of Western civilization as we have known it.
That's the Kevin Kelly fight, December of 1997, Larry.
Yes. And then there was, in that fight, after the fight, I interviewed Hamed, and he went into the mode of, well, it was God's will, or Allah's will. And I said to him, God isn't here, so I have to interview you.
Larry, I remember your relationship with Hamed. It got testy, like right around the Cesar Soto fight. I think he fought Paul Engle and Augie Sanchez. Has there ever been a guy, would you say that he became someone that you dreaded interviewing post-fight?
No, I liked him in a way, but when you're a big personality and you're putting yourself out there, you got to follow up on it. And I thought there were some times when he was slacking off, and you measure, a fighter by the expectations that he creates. The level that he creates. As I said, I thought that he went into decline, and he hadn't fought the elite Mexican featherweights of that time until he fought Barrera. And he was able to handpick opponents because of his popularity. There were marginal fight fans who were very attracted to him and his showmanship. And, hey, I like guys who are showmen. You know what? I was there for all of Ali's parade, so I like guys who are showmen. But it if you got to stand up and back it up. And there came times when he wasn't.
Larry Merchant joins us right now on the next round for the first hour, answering any of your tweets. Send them in at SteveUCNLive and at Gabriel_Montoya. Larry, a common theme, and me and Gabe agree on this, fighters who jump up in weight so they could say, well, we won titles in four separate weight classes while never actually planting their flag and cleaning out a division. That's a pet peeve of ours. Does that bother you about today's modern game?
Well, look, it's with the elite fighters, it's always existed. I mean, Sugar Ray Robinson's first 20 fights or so were as a lightweight. And that's simply that elite fighters, like other elite athletes, generally show their potential, at least, when they're very young. And so they are often kept at low weights while they're naturally growing, and that isn't good for them. But it may be good for them in a certain way, and that they're fighting at a weight that's their strongest. And so if a star presents himself early enough, he's going to naturally grow. And also, the other factor is, if he's that good and he's too good for people in his weight class, then yes, we want to see if he can compete against bigger guys. Certainly, you know, for example, Garcia is in that.
Mikey Garcia
is in that category now. Crawford will be. And some guys can maintain that lower weight, particularly when they're young, even if it's not natural to them anymore. But as they get older and they start fighting less and they have other interests and distractions, it becomes harder and harder to make the lower weight, so they naturally move up. And look, you know, before Henry Armstrong, there were fighters who moved up in weight, and after Henry Armstrong, and the great fighters do that, and it's in part because promoters want to have something to promote, and that's, you know, can he handle the bigger weight, the bigger guys. And that's a natural progression for many of them.
Larry, you mentioned Mikey Garcia. July 29th on Showtime, he takes on Adrian Broner at 140, basically skipping over a lot of fights at 135. Has this matchup piqued your interest at all?
Yes. Yes, it does. And look, I think it's a money fight. It should generate a lot of interest. And the winner is going to make more money than that after that fight.
Here's a great tweet from Alex P. Is Larry more excited for McGregor Mayweather than he was for Muhammad Ali versus Antonio Inoki? And will it be as thrilling a fight as that, Larry?
Well, first, I'm sorry to report that I had less than no interest about Ali and Inoki, as much as I loved Ali. And I am equally as thrilled with the prospect of Mayweather and McGregor. As we all know, there are probably thousands of boxers out there who could beat McGregor in a boxing match, and thousands of MMA characters who could beat Mayweather in a mixed martial arts match.
Larry, when Inoki Ali took place, you didn't go to cover it, I'm assuming.
You are assuming correctly. I didn't. I don't. I have a recollection that I didn't even watch it on
closed circuit.
On theater television, they had it. But then I later saw some excerpts, and it was a farce. Even the Japanese fans were booing, and they seldom boo. You know, but it was a money event, and over a long period of time, there have been these kinds of freak show events that have struck a chord among viewers.
Larry, you know an event is forgettable if you don't even recall if you were there or not.
Well,
there's
I know
question-
I wasn't there.
Right, but okay, here's a question from Giovanni and Dave. Larry, do you have any plans on writing an autobiography or any type of book?
Well, the major part of my life now is procrastinating. and trying to avoid that. I don't know if it's becoming inevitable or forgettable at this point, but I have thought about it, and a number of people have asked me about it.
And here's another question from Giovanni. Does Larry think HBO is slowly getting out of the boxing business? Larry, what do you think about what's going on with the boxing program at your old network?
You know, I have friends there, and they don't know. It's some kind of a corporate thing. They're involved in some kind of a mega merger discussions. Maybe the numbers, the viewership, doesn't justify the kind of money they once spent, or virtually all of their maybe the. The game has undergone a shift, a reorientation in terms of where the money is and where you go. And I mean, there was a time when they gave big contracts to star fighters, money that translates into today's money equaling tens of millions of dollars to go on HBO. Well, the viewership doesn't justify that anymore, I imagine. They're hanging in there with the pay-per-views. I don't know what's going on between Bob Arum and them. It appears, if not ominous, certainly going in the wrong direction. But there have been so many good fights recently. You know, maybe in some way this is just HBO tightening its belt and pulling up its pants for the next chapter.
Gabe?
I have one more Hall of Fame question. I was wondering if you could talk about Eddie Booker, who's the old-timer going in this year. I don't know if you had anything on him.
I don't know Booker. There are many people who don't know others who are in the Hall of Fame. I'm sure a lot of them don't know me either. So that's a name that kind of blindsided me. I didn't know about his career.
Yeah, Larry, as you walk around the street, you do your thing, you're still a very recognizable figure. How many people still come up to you and ask you boxing questions?
Numbers of them. And today, frankly, it's mostly about Mayweather and McGregor.
Really?
Yeah.
That must disgust you.
You know, if they ask me what I think of it, I tell them. But they don't normally tell them. But the ones who are fight fans are very, very excited about Canelo and Golovkin. And when a big fight comes into view, I get a lot of questions about it. Yes.
And Larry, you do plan it being to Golovkin Canelo, right? Because you still like to go to fights, at least the ones you feel are worthy. That one right there is marked on your calendar, right?
It is. You know, and I like to go and hang out with old friends and get the vibe of the fight. And frankly, I just want to see what happens. I mean, I saw Canelo the first time when he was maybe 17 years old or 18 years old. And I thought, whoa, who is this? What is his story? And something similar with Golovkin. The first time I saw him, after 30 seconds of watching him, I said, this is a guy who reminds me of old-time middleweights. So, yeah, I want to see what happens. Maybe I just want to get out of the house a little bit and get the feeling of and the vibe of a big fight, and that may turn out to be a memorable fight.
Larry, last week was the passing of Frank DeFord, who was one of your colleagues at HBO with Real Sports. Any real remembrances of him?
Frank DeFord was a terrific writer and reporter, but he didn't like boxing. That's what
really?
I know about Frank. Yes. He really,
funny because one of the pictures they showed of him last week was with Ray Leonard when he was doing a feature on him. I found that's pretty ironic.
Yeah, you know, he was very smart at picking up on personalities who transcended their sports, as well as finding the kind of stories that and being able to write them well enough that enhanced our picture of sports. He wrote a famous piece, or at least it was famous to me, way back early in the days of Sports Illustrated, about Billy Kahn, the great light heavyweight champion, who fought Joe Louis twice, and his wife, and the story of their romance, which was funny and beautiful and so on and so forth. I think it was called The Boxer and the Blonde. For anybody listening or you guys, look it up. It's a classic.
Yeah, and Larry,
I was always waiting for the movie.
Right, and I remember reading that as a kid, and I think Billy Kahn's father-in-law hated him.
Right.
And that caused kind of a riff in the relationship.
There are all kinds of funny things and odd things in the various relationships of the families and so on, and it's just the kind of story of the kind of colorful characters with colorful backgrounds that got me interested in boxing in the first place.
Larry, is there a fight that you missed during your time on the beat that you regret that you missed for some reason, like you had a dental appointment or you got sick or you had to cover the World Series? Is there a great fight that got away from you?
There were some fights that I didn't, you know, I didn't see Ali Liston 1, for example. I was then sports editor of the Philadelphia Daily News, and I had a guy I regarded as the best writer in boxing, who covered that for us, and I covered it just as a television event. And here's another. I was not actually. I went to Zaire for the Foreman Ali fight with Ali, on a plane with Ali, because I was going early because I thought I might write a book about it. And incidentally, while we were flying to Zaire, Ali first got on the loudspeaker system from the cockpit and started to doing riffs over the fact that there were two black pilots on this flight from this Zaire airline, and how he wasn't sure they'd be able to find their way to Zaire or be able to land the plane. It was it just had everybody just rolling. And then he came out, and he sat down next to me, and he said these words, because everybody in that time thought this was Ali's last hurrah, including me. And he said, if he doesn't get me in 7, his parachute won't open. Because the one flaw in that George Foreman was his stamina. And guess what? Ali stopped him in the 8th. But I wasn't there. Now, that's what happened before the fight. I wasn't there because the fight was delayed around 6 weeks because of a cut that Foreman suffered in sparring. And I went back home. And when I went back to the airport to go for the fight, the authorities from Zaire would not let me get on the plane. And that was because of some columns I had written about some of the things going on with the government and the fight and et cetera and so forth.
Larry Merchant joins us right now on the next round. Gabe, any final questions before we let Mr. Merchant go on with his Monday?
No, I'm good. Larry, you've given us just so much. I just wanted to, you know, it's a long time no see. It's great to hear your voice and your stories and your knowledge, man.
Well, thank you, and hopefully I'll see you at the September 16th fight.
I'm thinking
in
about
Vegas.
It. Yeah, I'm thinking about it. We'll see.
All right. Well, listen, Larry. We always appreciate you coming on. We'll be keeping tabs. Okay, Larry. Thanks a lot. As
thank
always.
You guys. Keep.
And that was the legend, Larry Merchant, joining us. Always a wealth of knowledge. It's a great honor. I'm just very flattered that he'd actually come on with us. Gabe, real quickly, moving on. I said last week, Stevenson Fonfar, there really was no reason or no calling or no demand for this rematch. And now you see why. And you go back with Fonfara, forget the fact he was buzzed and taken out of there early by Joe Smith. You could say, okay, he got ambushed, he got blitzed, got taken by surprise. Can happen to anybody. Joe Smith's a legitimate puncher. What I don't think enough people talked about was that he needed a miraculous comeback to beat a faded Chad Dawson in his fight after that. Gabe,
yeah.
All the signs were there for this blowout.
It lived up to expectations, right?
low ones.
Yeah, very, very low. He didn't look like he could take a punch, you know? And it was, you know, he actually landed a decent right, or it seemed to. It kind of grazed on the replay, and then just eats a counter shot. I mean, ultimately, he just has not learned how to roll with shots. He takes them very stiff and upright, and he takes all of it, and that's what happened. He never recovered. I mean, it was kind of a weird stoppage, but, I mean, he was getting hit, and he wasn't doing anything about it. He wasn't solving that problem, and I think it was a merciful stoppage. It's a shame, you know. What do you do with him? at this point.
By the way, I don't disagree with the stoppage. I think that was going one way. This guy's been buzzed before, and I know people have a lot of ill will towards Stevenson, which I think some of it, or a lot of it, is absolutely justified. But don't get this twisted. This man can punch. He is still one of the devastating punchers in the sport, and I think he is still a very, very dangerous tough out at 175, putting aside whatever personal feelings or judgments we had. But I have to tell you, is there any fighter that relishes taking the path of least resistance and hiding behind his management more than Superman Stevenson? Emmanuel Stewart must be rolling over in his grave.
Oh, my God. Yeah, he it's just, yeah, like you said, it's deserved. I mean, he seems to relish the role as the bad guy. He's kind of gamed the system in a way. You know, and I understand not every fight has to be a tough one. It can't be a tough one. But we should probably mix in some tough ones at this point. I mean, maybe he's waiting for the winner of Kovalev, you know, versus Ward 2.
You think he really is?
No, I don't. He really
yeah,
don't.
See, I mean, listen, when Jim Gray asked him, hey, how about Elidor Alvarez? And this guy's the long overdue mandatory. And Sam Watson basically whispered, oh, hell no, you're not doing that. And then it was like a puppet. It was like lamb chop saying, no, we're not doing that. It was baffling to me.
Well, I mean, it goes back to – I remember talking to Al Heyman one time, me and John Novoselic, and when he was still writing.
Is there proof of this?
Well, you have to ask John. And it was, you know, before the – it was during the fight, so we were sober. He'll remember. But it was during it was Paul Williams. I don't think he was fighting, but it was around, you know, that era. And we asked him, you know, John said, don't you think Paul Williams versus Vernon Forrest would be a good fight? And Al said, yeah. And John said, well, why don't you make it? Or are you going to make it? And Al said, nope, and walked away. He was very friendly, but, you know, very firm in how he likes to do things. I just don't see him, you know, Stevenson, he's making money, he's doing well, taking soft touches. I don't see him taking on any, you know, I mean, he's got the mandatory, he's going to have to do it sooner or later, but, you know, after seeing him do what he did with Pascal, I mean, I don't think Stevenson has much to worry about, do you? With Alvarez?
No, because the one thing about Elidor Alvarez, good skills, but I got to tell you, I thought there are points where I'm thinking, push the issue. Shove Pascal off the ledge, and he's doing just enough to keep him in the fight. It was a very frustrating performance. And if you want to beat a guy like Stevenson, part of you has to be bold. You have to be willing to take some risks. You just can't stay on the outside and lay out the jab. It's going to take more than that to beat Adonis Stevenson. Gabe, going back to what we talked about, starting our segment with Larry Merchant, Golovkin Canelo at T-Mobile in Las Vegas. Turns out Dallas was not really in it. I was told by Eric Gomez, who confirmed. I think Jerry Jones knew the writing was on the wall. He knew the lay of the land, that he didn't even put in a bid. It seemed to me it was almost a fait accompli because, as we say, Vegas, when they want to fight, they become the 800-pound gorilla. But I'll say it again. It really is disappointing that we keep going to the same template or the cookie cutter time and time again. And these events are so rare where you could really grow the sport and do something different. And you know what's going to happen here, Gabe. People are going to try to get tickets, and they're going to be priced out from the beginning. And there's going to be thousands of disappointed fans. There comes a point in time where when is boxing ever going to see the trees through the forest?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, it's not a good thing to create ill will with the fan that can just go on Facebook Live to get their revenge, you know? And then you lose pay-per-view numbers, you know? I think Oscar said this could do like 3 million, which I think it could do 2 easy. I feel like everybody wants to see it, but then we live in this multi-stream world where people can make you pay for restricting the live seats. I do feel like they really missed out, but you know, they're a company that's barely been recovered. Was recovering from what Al Heyman and Richard Schaefer, that whole situation. They've got Canelo, who they might lose. I mean, I think probably part of this is securing dates. We'll find out what the whole deal is, I'm sure, within a few weeks. But, you know, what are you ultimately gaining? I mean, maybe they're saving their company or protecting it with these kind of dates. But, you know, like you said, you could also be bold and you could make a huge event. Dodger Stadium, you know, Jerry's World, I don't know, you know, if that's really the spot for it. I thought Dodger Stadium would have been fantastic. But, you know, it's the T Chernobyl. Are you going to go? Or are you going to go to... You are.
That's a fight I'm going to go to. If it was on Mars or Pluto or the Silver Dome, I would have been there. But I certainly feel bad for the fans. Listen, I'm lucky. I get to do this job. I'm credentialed, and I get to work the event. I have a very good seat. But I understand being a fan. And, you know, I deal with these people, interact with them on Twitter, social media. I know a lot of them. They know the score, that the best they're going to be able to do is to watch it on closed circuit. And, you know, they always say it's for the fans, but everything really points to the bottom line. And in addition to securing dates with the MGM properties or whatever that corporation is called, I don't think there's any doubt that the specter of Mayweather-McGregor, not necessarily landing on the same date, but being in the same month and perhaps cutting into the business or the attention span of the American public, certainly played a role. And by placing this at the T-Mobile in Las Vegas, it basically means that they get a safe space for this event. I've been told by multiple people, like Steve, the Mayweather-McGregor fight certainly impacted the direction of where this fight landed. But I also argue this. If you have Canelo Alvarez, and, you know, he fights well, win, lose, or draw, you really think Vegas in the future is going to turn away Canelo? There's not that many draws in contemporary combat sports. He is still a guy that swings a big stick. And it is what it is, but hey, as we say, boxing is a business. Gabe, we're on for 24 minutes. Let's go through these phones.
All right, then. 1 second. 585, you're live on the next round.
Hey, guys, it's Jake from Rochester.
Jake,
hey,
what's going on?
Hey, you know, the whole boxing group message board world is really buzzing about this Top Rank new platform thing. People are saying that Ndongo or Crawford and Ndongo are going to be on it, potentially Lomachenko, Salido too. People are talking about, like, crazy sums of money, like $600 million or something is invested in it. I don't know, do you know anything about it? I mean,
here's what I do know, and I did write about this a little bit, and I've been able to gain a little bit more information. Here's the general thesis. There's a lot of money into this. Now, I don't know if it's Kedar Capital, which has been sponsoring a lot of the top-ranked fights recently, but I'm being told that the managers are being informed at every level, hey, if you want to fight a lot, you're going to have the opportunity. There's going to be a lot of dates, and there's certainly going to be an online component, and I'm being told there's also going to be a television component. Now, what I don't know is if this is a subscription service or not, but even guys like the ones you mentioned, Jake, at the very top level, I've been told, this is word for word, they will be making HBO-level money, and that Aram is telling other people, I've got so many dates that I probably need more fighters. And I think the official announcement, which was supposed to be made last week, could come by either Tuesday or Wednesday. I'm very curious, Gabe.
Oh, that's exciting. I mean, you know, it's a proven promoter. I think there's going to be immediate pushback of, you know, you guys hated the PBC right off the bat. Now you're loving up on Bob Arum. But screw all that. You know, I like a guy with a track record of making stars. And they've been a company that has done streaming. It's kind of understood the internet and the use of social media, you know, as it's developed. I'm excited, man. And when Bob Arum says we're going to need more fighters, hopefully, you know, it's a guy that has worked with other people in the past, and we start getting the kind of fights that we want, particularly if there's a drop off in fees.
Gabe, all those people that gave PBC a free pass, forget them. they made this an issue culturally, racially, cheering on a guy because of certain reasons that had nothing to do with quality. But they should be judged on the same standard we put the PBC in. This is about the fights. In theory, it's great for Top Rank. The quality of fights and their willingness to reach across the aisle and work with others, that's what's really going to determine if this is just good for Top Rank or is this good for boxing. To me, when it's all said and done, are you making good fights and are you working with others? I thought one of the main flaws of the PBC, it was a takeover attempt. It was an attempt to monopolize boxing that quickly and ultimately failed. Jake, anything else?
Yeah. What fights do you think have you heard that are rumored about to be made or could be made for this summer that like could surprise some boxing fans?
Well, listen, Crawford and Dongo, I think, is a done deal, and it will happen in Nebraska. Just may not be Omaha. I've already heard of fights for guys like Gray Beltran, which I thought was a solid matchup. A couple names have been discussed, Tony Lewis or Brian Vasquez. Those aren't bad. I think Oscar Valdez will get some legitimate fights. Listen, I know something was up when I was notified that two or three UNOMAS dates were scrapped, taken right off the books so that, hey, we've got something bigger and better. So, you know, again, everyone's being told very general things. Let's wait for the official announcement. Jake, thank you very much. Gabe, who's next?
619. You're live on the next round. 619?
Hey, guys, it's Juan. It's Juan from San Diego.
Juan, what's going on?
Hola, Juan.
Yeah, great, great. Thanks. I didn't see any purpose on that Adonis Stevenson fight. I still saw it. It was a joke. It was a joke. I was on vacation, and I had my Showtime app on my phone and decided to give it a go, and I was like, oh, my God, I can't believe I'm watching this while I'm on vacation. Just turn it off. And that ridiculous stuff. I couldn't understand what was going on. I just turned it off when I knew that we were going to interview that clown again. And that brings me to the next subject. And you were talking about this, the next wave of how boxing is going to be shown to the public. Right now, I've got bought a pay-per-view through Top Rank for the Manny Pacquiao fight, the last one. And it didn't work well. And we tried to do that with the Gennady Golovkin fight against Danny Jacobs, and then ended up going to my friend's house next door because we couldn't set it up. It didn't stream well. So I don't know how ready it is for that for TV, but for the phones and iPads and computers, that works pretty well. So I don't know if I want to see a fight on my big screen TV yet, like on that service. I don't think it's ready, but it's for phones and things like that. It works perfect. So I guess it's the future, and let's see how technology works. I like it. I think that's it. They can take a look at how UK is doing, you know, those boxing passes that they have. That would be wonderful to have, just, you know, have a subscription and just on demand get the fights and get the, you know, I'm a big fan of looking at old fights and watching documentaries. I still go back and watch them. So I think most boxing fights are like that. So I think if they're able to do that and use that back catalog with Top Rank, that would be absolutely great.
Juan, if you were asked, and again, I don't know anything, but people have certainly speculated, if they did a Box Nation-like package and they said, Juan, it's going to cost you $10 a month, do you buy that?
Of course. That's what I'm doing right
okay.
now. I'm a cord cutter. I'm not, you know, I don't have, I ditched DirecTV. Then I had AT&T, and I ditched it too. It's too expensive. They want to bundle you with channels you'll never watch. And right now what I do is I get my HBO subscription, my Showtime subscription, and if I get that boxing subscription, I would definitely buy it. Right now the only thing that pisses me off is HBO not streaming live fights. That's the only thing. But
yeah.
I'm sure they're going to do it if they, you know, they're serious about continuing with the boxing business, of course.
They would be really surprised, I think, at how much their subscriptions would go up if they did that, because it makes Showtime superior. I've got them both, too, and I really like it. You know, it's just really the way to go in terms of just monetarily.
You know, HBO should realize this is 2017, not 2007.
And let me tell you something before we let you go.
My God.
People are interested in boxing. People are interested in the boxing game. I hear it all the time. Like, people, whenever there's a big fight, people want to watch it. It's just about the product. And if you don't give the, you know, if you don't put the right fights, boxing will struggle. If you start putting the fights like this year, people start looking at it. And I'm sure that if they do a good job, guys from every, you know, ethnicity will watch, because boxing is a beautiful game. That's all I got.
Juan, we got to get running. Thank you for the call. We've got 15 minutes on the clock. Gabe Montoya's got some other fish to fry tonight. Gabe, who's next?
All right. Yeah, I was like deep in the woods, no cell connection, no internet for like 4 days. I was actually pretty grateful that that fight was so shitty and so fast. So it made it really easy to catch up, at least. So that's one positive about Funfara Stevenson. 209, you're live on the next round. 209.
Hey, guys, how you doing?
Good. What's going on?
You?
Hey, I want to talk about this weekend's fight, the Stevenson fight. You know what? I really wasn't looking forward to it. I wasn't looking forward to begin with. But after watching it, I mean, the people from Showtime, they really got to tell Al Haymon what they want to buy. And because, I mean, I remember a while back, I used to have Showtime, but I canceled my subscription because I wasn't happy with their boxing selection. And, you know, we are the paying customers. They are bringing out a product. You know, that's just food for thought. Anyways, the main reason why I called is I know you guys have been talking about it, but I'm pretty excited about this Top Rank viewing streaming that they're going to be doing, or their new online platform, or how they're going to start. You know, I'm kind of excited. And if the price is anywhere like $15, $20, $10, I'll sign up for it. You know, because to me, that gives me unlimited access to what I like watching. So that's pretty much what I have to say, guys.
Well, listen, I agree with you, and I'm excited for it or curious. But again, quality matters. Just like it did with the PBC. Free by itself or being cheap, I guess there's value to it. But, Gabe, I'm lucky I have a little bit of disposable income. I want something good. I don't want a bunch of red corner beating blue corner, you know, 8 out of 8 fights. I don't need cowboys versus Indians all the time, as Russell Peltz would say, you know?
Don't give me the verses of the internet, is what you're saying. Don't
tie please don't tie Fields and Yuri Foreman me to death. Yes. You know, that's what makes us different on this show. We actually criticize those who deserve it. Okay? Anyway.
Yeah.
Gabe.
Thank you guys very much, guys. I love your show, and I'll tune in next week again.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks
very much, Gabe.
Hey, you know, I don't know if we were going to get to it. There is a fight this weekend, and I did want to talk a little bit about Joel Diaz Jr. versus Regis Progre. Do you have any thoughts
good
on
fight.
It?
Good fight. Listen, like you said on Twitter, this is what Showbox is about. And even by Showbox standards, this is upper-level stuff here. I think Progre is just a little bit better athlete. I think he's a little bit sharper. But, again, Gordon Hall, props to him. This is a guy that for years gives a damn about the fans and really cares about his program. I'm looking forward to this on Friday night, Gabe.
Yeah, both the fights are solid. And I, you know, Diaz Jr. is, what, 25 years old, 23-0, 19 knockouts. He's 5'8", 68.5-inch reach. Regis Progre, he's also a right-hander, is a southpaw, age 28, 5'8", 67-inch reach, 19 wins, 16 KOs. And he's really come on as a knockout artist his last few fights. As they've stepped up the competition, the fights have gotten short. But I think he's fought something like – he only fought 5 rounds last year, 2 fights. And Diaz had 3 fights, total of 7 rounds. It's very evenly matched. It's hard to pick one. I kind of lean towards Diaz Jr. a little bit because he's been in a firefight before. I think this is a return to Showbox. I could be wrong.
It
since
is.
That fight with Guy Raab, right?
Yeah.
So he's been in the spotlight before, and he won. It's taken him a long time to get back here. I don't know. He looks very strong. He's had a lot of experience. I don't think he's at the summit anymore, right?
No. Sure exactly. He didn't make weight one time properly, and Abel Sanchez gave him the pink slip.
That's a bummer. Well, you know, I still, I mean, it's a toss up, you know, nobody's going to kill me if I'm wrong, but I'm going with Diaz Jr., but it should be a solid fight. That and Steve Rolls and Damon Nicholson should be pretty fun. I think I lean more towards Nicholson.
Gabe, also this weekend on CBS Sports Network from luxurious Sloan, Iowa, one of my favorite casinos, the win of Vegas, Daniel Franco takes on Jose Haro. Franco continues on the Rock Nation Club Tour circuit all across America. And then from Belfast, Ireland on AWE, there is stateside coverage of the IBF Bantamweight title. Lee Haskin takes on Ryan Burnett. And then Sunday on FS1 from Lancaster, not Pennsylvania, but Lancaster, California, Brandon Rios returns against Aaron Herrera. How the mighty have fallen, Gabe.
That's brutal.
Yeah.
I mean, well, yeah. You know, Regis Progre actually stopped Aaron Herrera back last March. So maybe we'll see where Rios is. I guess that's a measuring stick. But, man, I worry about him. I fear for him. Hopefully he's in good shape. Let's get 978, Jimmy's Corner. With our
guys, what's happening? Yeah, well,
Jimmy, what's going on?
What's going on, guys? I know you got to get going, Gabe, but real quick.
No worries.
I watched it because I had nothing going on Saturday night, so I watched it. But what a joke. What a joke. And for him, the few people that I found on Twitter today to, like, defend him, like, you get to the last bit and they're like, well, he's the lineal champ. Like, that's supposed to mean something. Listen, I understand it means something, but I made a tweet. I sent out a tweet and it just encapsulates it. Because as you get older, like I'm older, you know, so you learn, you look back in your life and things matter. What you did for a living, what your namesake for most people matters. Now, when he's, like I made, you know, what I said was, I was a little angry I said, so it's a little kind of pushy, but I said, 20 years from now, if he was at, say, a Hall of Fame inductory ceremony, a lot of the ex-fighters show up there, what is he going to do, be standing off by himself? And I said, with the people who don't recognize him clamoring for somebody like Mickey Ward's autograph, who never was lineal anything, is he going to say, but I was the lineal champ? You know what I mean? Like, what does it matter? Like, it's your fucking, it's your existence. And right now, he's a joke. And it is so obvious. Like, I put it with Wilder, too. Listen, you guys know, the people who handle your career know you better than anybody. There's a reason they're avoiding people. It can't just be because he's like, I want the money. It's the same thing with Wilder. With me, personally, I think people in Wilder's corner think his chin is so bad that they are going to fucking do whatever they can to wait till a big cash-out fight. And I think it's the same thing with Adonis. I think they know he's got great cracking left, no doubt about it. But it's so obvious that he's avoided anybody good. I just can't wrap my head around it. And also,
well, it's that old adage, right, that in the defenses, you know, you don't become rich as soon as you win the title. You got to string it along. And yeah, I mean, your corner knows you better than anybody, right? You know, even if
right.
it's Al Haymon doesn't, you know, the corner does. And there's
exactly.
a reason why they pick the guys they pick. You know, when you're doing
exactly.
Fanfara twice, come on, man.
Exactly.
Come on.
Thank you. Exactly. And real quick, going backwards, listen, I wanted to ask you guys, after rewatching it, I want, you know, I like to always watch, you know, fight after when, you know, emotion's out of it. To me, it looked like it wasn't, it obviously was, I had something to do with it, but I think Brooke was as gassed as he was hurt. I really think he was smoked. Just so right, Steve, when you said, well, you both said that the fucking weight was going to be an issue. I didn't think it was going to be as much an issue as it was, and I really do believe that fluctuation of weight caught up to him. Because even when he went down to the knee, when he first went down, if you watch it, he grabs the other eye. He grabs his right eye first and then grabs his left. So not that that means anything, but I think he was spent anyways. I think it was half
yeah.
fatigue and half his eye. But that's just my opinion.
You know, like the red light and the buzzer are going off inside of his head. You know, it was just like totally overwhelmed.
I think the
body punching sure didn't help. That's what you do with a guy when he, you know, you probably had trouble making weight, is make him feel sicker than
Jimmy,
he probably already does.
Yes.
Quick question for you. Being the big boxing aficionado that you are, would you pay $10 for a top rank network, if you will, similar to what
Absolutely.
The WWE has? You would, okay.
In a hot beat. $120 a month? I mean, I spend, what was it, $70?
Yeah, a year.
I spent $70 on Chavez Canelo. You know what I mean? They got me. I can't see that
sure.
streaming thing. I don't have good luck with that shit. I know everybody says that's easy and you just stream it.
dude, I have no luck with that shit. I get like two seconds in, bip. So, you know, I'm not going to play that game for $10 a month. If I'm getting, if I get one good fight every couple of months for $10, Christ, you tip that in a month at D&D. So fuck it.
Mm.
Don't be cheap. Support these guys. Because listen, the big networks aren't going to do it. If we as fans want this to continue, we're going to have to figure something out. And, you know, I know I throw a lot of hate towards Al Heyman. I just wish Spence was with Aaron, because you know this kid has everything. He has the look, the personality. I think if he was promoted right, this kid could really be the thing. But anyways, gentlemen, yes, I answer your question emphatically. Yes, I would, and I would spend $10 on a fucking Golden Boy if they run one too. I want fighting.
Okay.
I want good fighting. You know what I mean? So I'll do whatever it has to. So
yes, the quality has to match.
Matter.
What is
exactly
being promised. That's
thank
the big
you
fear that I have. And it might also create more divisions within the sport. If Top Rank gets this thing up and running, I would hope that they understand that they still have a responsibility to make the best fights possible, not make the best possible within their own stable. It's a huge difference.
Right.
Jimmy, we got to run,
and
okay?
Yes, absolutely, gentlemen. You guys have a great night. Talk to you next week.
Thank you.
Peace.
Jimmy. Gabe, keep going.
All right, 703, you're live on the next round.
Hey, gentlemen, how you guys doing tonight?
Hey,
hey,
what's going on, man?
Hey, all right, I'm going to pick up a little bit. I got a couple of questions. I want to pick up a little bit on what Jimmy was saying. Regarding Stevenson, I got a question for both of you guys. What does Belt Organization like to see him matched up with somebody, particularly Kovalev or Ward, just for the money alone, the sanctioning fees?
You know, they usually have a cap. The sanctioning fees are usually between 2 and 3%, and for the real expensive fight, they usually work out a deal. But I got to be honest with you. If a guy doesn't want to fight a guy, he ain't going to fight a guy.
Wow. Second thing I want to ask regarding Deontay. You got Tony Bell who's saying now that he would like to maybe face. I think he said, I read something where he was saying he might want to fight sometime in the fall. Yeah, and then obviously it looks like we're going to have a rematch of Joshua Klitschko. Where does that leave Wilder and Ortiz? And what I mean is Wilder just – because I haven't heard anything about the Stavern rematch or the basically the mandated fight. Would he go with Ortiz? And I know he wouldn't, but what do you think about that?
That's a great question, Gabe. Just where is Wilder? Is he kind of in the state of Bolivian?
Well, I mean, the number one is Bermain Stavern. Number two is Klitschko. Number three is Luis Ortiz. So, you know, it's going to have to be somebody. It's not going to be Vlad. It's probably be one of those other two guys. Maybe Kubrat Pulev. You know, I mean, the top ten has got some names that would be, I guess, kind of interesting. I mean, everything after six is, you know, Andrew Ruiz and Marius Wach. But I'd love to see Ortiz versus Wilder. I just don't think he does it. You know, does he have another, does he have a mandatory due or does he have another PBC defense?
You know, and there's no real buzz from those guys who are better versed in the PBC universe. There's not even any buzz about when he might fight again. There's not even speculation. I mean, seriously, sometimes you just get an idea from certain guys that are within that camp or have good relationships with them. There's no talk of Wilder right now. Seriously.
Well, I mean, where's Danny Jacobs' next fight? You know, why don't we – I don't understand it. You know, Errol Spence, I can understand. You're kind of looking around the landscape. You're checking in to see how Thurman's healing and putting together
the
timeline
of
things.
Well, you know what, Gabe? This weekend, Errol Spence says, hey, I hope to fight in September. I want to fight in September. You know, there's that old saying about the squeaky wheel gets the grease. Whether he gets it or not, I don't know. But at least Spence is doing his part by almost, I don't say demanding it, but making it clear that, hey, I don't want to go on a siesta the rest of 2017. I admire that.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, you know, yelling your name as they're, you know, pulling you into the van to take you away. It's like he's letting everybody know, look, if you don't see me in September, it isn't my fault.
Right.
You know, and, you know, with that contract, he can't criticize Al. So it's one way to do it.
So next week, we will be previewing the rematch that nobody gives a damn about. I mean, one of the most bizarre non-promotions led by Rock Nation Sports, Kovalev Ward. And I think by next Monday, Top Rank will unveil their grand new plan, and we'll certainly get into that. And I guess we'll bring in Jim Boone, who I believe will have plenty of tickets at a very favorable price for June 17th. So, Booney, if you're listening out there, clear off your calendar for 5 o'clock next week. Same bat channel, same bat time. So, anyway, Gabe, I know you got to run and take care of some business. This has been the next round on the David Duenas Radio Network. On behalf of Gabriel Montoya and the rest of LITR, this is Steve Kim saying goodbye, everybody.
At Capital One, we understand that everyone wants to be certain about something.
I'd like to be certain that chocolate will always exist. That I'm never late for work.
I haven't left the gas on.
I'd like to be certain that the sun is going to shine tomorrow.
With Capital One, you can be 100% certain if you'll be accepted for a credit card before you apply, without affecting your credit score. To get an answer now, search online for Capital One Quick Check. Capital One, the card in your corner.